Have you finished your personal statement yet? Now's the perfect time to get it professionally reviewed by a medical school HQ expert advisor. We have former directors of admissions, admissions officers, and the like on our small team of amazing people. They have the inside knowledge from reading thousands and thousands and thousands, tens, if not 100,000 personal statements going through the process and setting up the process for their whole committee. They know exactly what medical schools look for and the common red flags that can get your entire application thrown out. Take advantage of our flash sale right now, going through May 6th, up to 6,000 characters reviewed for just $150. That's a $75 discount on our regular price. Go to editmyps.com. Again, that's editmyps.com. The pre-med year, session number 540. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. And welcome to The Pre-Med Years. Thank you so much for joining me today. I have an amazing guest, one of our newest advisors here on the Medical School HQ team. If you didn't know, we do one-on-one advising to help students with their applications, with their pre-med journey, their pre-med pathway, and so much more. Our one-on-one advising is what supports us to do everything else that we do for free for so many students out there every day, every year. So if you are interested in some one-on-one advising, potentially working with Dina, our guest today, go to medicalschoolhq.net and check out that advising tab at the top. We're going to talk all about Dina's path into medical school admissions and advising, and some help for some non-trads and all pre-meds out there. Before we jump in, though, I want to remind you that we're sponsored by Blueprint MCAT. Go check them out at blueprintmcat.com. Sign up for that free account, which has so many amazing free resources, a half-length diagnostic, a full-length exam, their amazing study planner tool, and so much more. Go check them out at blueprintmcat.com. Dina, welcome to the pre-med years. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you on, and I'm even more excited to have you part of the Medical School HQ advising team now. Talk about kind of how you ended up in this pre-med, pre-health advising world.
By saying yes to opportunities that came across my path. My experience is mainly as an educator and a counselor and advocate for students. I was a high school guidance counselor at a public school, and really got engrossed in the college admissions world. It was a passion of mine. It was my niche. It was like personal victories when you know, students would get accepted to schools, especially, you know, first gen students or students who didn't even know how to apply to college. And I started just saying yes to a lot of opportunities with networking, with a lot of higher ed organizations. And Brown University took me on to their inaugural counselor advisory board. So I represented the state of Rhode Island, and I sat on their undergrad admissions counselor advisory board, helping, you know, write some of their supplemental questions and just giving feedback on the admissions process. And at the same time, I had a graduate intern from Providence College who shadowed me and worked with me. And she ended up going on to work at Northeastern in pre-med advising. And she picked up the phone one day, love her. And she said, "Hey, you're the best writer I know. You taught me everything I know. How would you like to learn how to write committee letters and work part-time and be involved in pre-med advising?" And I was like, "Well, you got to teach me everything there is to learn." And I said, yes. And that was it. From there, I just loved the med school space.
Yeah. What is it about the med school space that you felt was different or more exhilarating, or I don't know about getting in?
I think I had, outgrown, in a way, the undergrad admission space. Still help a lot of public school students, which is wonderful, but I think I just wanted something more. And the complexity and just the entanglement of all everything that goes on in medical school admissions, it was like almost refreshing to be challenged in a new way to help students, you know, achieve their dreams, especially students who, you know, really love STEM and and science.
Pre-meds love science, and I bet they want to help people too. That is fantastic. So you ended up at Brown as an advisor in their SMP program, working with non-traditional students and other students.
Yeah.
Talk about what that is like on that side of kind of tangential to medical school, right, at Brown, but for the SMP, what was that like?
I loved my time at Alpert Medical School. I left a career I was in public education after 23 years and said yes and took this position as Assistant Director of Advising, Student Support, and Outreach for the Masters of Medical Sciences program at Brown. It was embedded in the Warren Alpert Medical School. So it was a small cohort of students, about 35 students, and it was a one-year program. They took the same courses as the M1s did. So they were basically engrossed in medical school at the same time. And so I still had that ability to advise students, work with students, work on their applications with them, help write their committee letters, and just working with that population of students that thought they couldn't do it and thought they could not become doctors and get accepted to medical school and just had tried and failed and maybe had one application cycle that failed, maybe had two, maybe changed careers and went from engineering and decided, you know, they wanted to go to medical school, students from underrepresented backgrounds. It was just very rewarding.
Yeah.
Very rewarding. The results are unbelievable. And with the right, it just proved that with the right advising and the right support and the right program, non-traditional students can definitely get there.
Yeah.
So yeah. I loved it. And
I want to, before we jumping ahead into your career and your time at Stanford, I want to focus on these non-traditional students because that's a lot of who we interact with as advisors at Medical School HQ and a lot of people who follow me, partly because they just don't have advisors at their institutions as non-trads because they're not in school anymore. So when you think about your time at Alpert and in the SMP program and the students who were successful there, like what makes a successful SMP student?
Taking advantage of what that program has to offer. So taking advantage of the advising, of the advice, of the mentorship of the professors and the faculty, learning how to study again was a big part of being in that program. Some of the students hadn't been in school in maybe like 5 years. So just learning study habits, keeping up with the pace of say like brain science or a micro ID class and, you know, realizing, wow, this is what med school is going to really be like. And then taking advantage of connections with the community. So the program that I was a part of had a capstone project that paired students with like a free clinic or in, you know, a federally qualified healthcare center, and students who had been out of school for a while were able to gain research experience and partner with the clinician and gain those essential skills and just took advantage of everything that the program had to offer. In the end, we generated a committee letter that professors would write letters. So for students who'd been out of school for a long time and couldn't get those letters, they formed relationships. So forming relationships with all of those people who can support you in the process when you apply is really important.
So it sounds very time intensive. Right. For a student who is a career changer, maybe they still need to work to put food on their table, a roof over their head. Maybe they're a single parent. It sounds like maybe ALPERT wouldn't be the best program for them, but there are lots of other options for SMPs or post-bac programs, right?
There are, yes, a lot of programs. You have to do your research and know what you want to get out of the program, basically. Do you want a small cohort? Do you want to be one of 150 students? Do you want MCAT prep built into the program, which is something that the program I was in offered? Do you want clinical and research opportunities on top of the academics?
Yeah, lots of things to think about.
Lots of things to consider.
Yeah.
They're very different. A lot of the programs are very different.
Mm-hmm. So you transitioned away from ALPERT to move into medical school admissions at Stanford. What was the goal behind saying yes there?
I think that I just wanted to foster that curiosity. I think leaving a profession that I was in for 23 years, a profession where a lot of educators are often told, like, you're in it for life, right? Now that I was out, it was like, oh my God, like, what can I do? I can do so many different things. And I think I was just so curious, similar to within undergrad admissions. I was reading for a time as a seasonal reader in undergrad admissions at Northeastern as well, knowing what happens on the other side, and being able to bring all of the knowledge I had helping students and advising students to the admission side. Because I always would ask myself, like, do people in admissions know that this is what students are thinking, or this is where they're coming from when they make up certain questions or certain deadlines? And I wanted to try to make an impact in that way. Yeah. Of course, I wanted to help evaluate applications, and I felt having worked with such a non-traditional population, I could bring that strength with me to evaluate applications in my next role and try to find those spectacular students.
The needles in the haystack, so to speak. Diamonds in the rough.
Diamonds in the rough.
Yeah. So yeah. Now that you have that experience, right, and now you're on our team, looking at the SMP side, looking at the pre-health side, or pre-med side, the undergraduate side, writing your committee letters back in the day, and then from the admissions side now, do you think that question that kind of you had going in of, like, do they understand the hopes and the fears and the dreams and the struggles? I asked this question of someone the other day, right? It seems like from a pre-med perspective, and I talked to lots of pre-meds, that the admissions committees sit in their ivory tower and just make these rules, and they aren't really in touch with what's going on. Do you think that's a fair assessment from the pre-med world, or no?
I think two things. I think that there is so much that happens behind the scenes, right? It is like such a huge production. It's like putting on the Macy's Day Parade, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. Like, everything looks splendid to the viewer, but all the work that goes on behind the scenes is, it's daunting. There is so much procedurally, operationally, just making sure that everything is up and running. There's so many pieces.
Yeah. Like what? Without specifics, right? In general, like, what kind of stuff?
Yeah. So, for example, if a student is admitted, right, mm-hmm. you get that phone call, like, congratulations, we're offering you acceptance, and it's great. And then the next day, they're expecting to be able to go onto their portal, right, and see their acceptance and move forward. Like, how do I fill out financial aid forms? How do I move forward with getting my transcripts over? Like, they have to be in a system, right? So just facilitating all details like that, like technicalities of putting newly accepted students into a system and making sure financial aid is aware. And there's just so much that goes on behind the scenes. So I think that admissions is a busy place. And it's the same thing with undergrad admissions too. It's just, it's a grind, in the words of one of my good friends who's works at Brown, it's a grind. And there's not a lot of time to do other things and for outreach. And I think one of the biggest holes or absences there is that transparency and that connection to really working with pre-med advisors and working with pre-meds to just build those relationships and help answer questions so that it doesn't seem, you know, they know that there's definitely not a team sitting in an ivory tower. Yeah. I'll tell you that. That does not happen.
So in terms of, right, that lack of outreach to advisors maybe in the surrounding area, to pre-med students who may be interested in those schools, do you think that's intentional to keep secrets, or do you think it's just under-resourced and don't have time to do it?
I don't think it's intentional. I don't, because at the end of the day, you know, admissions wants to find future doctors, right? They're so, like, you're excited to read applications and, you know, make these dreams come true, but there's just not a lot of time and resources, similar to, you know, how there's a lack of pre-med advising in undergrad. There's just not a lot of time or resources to do it. I really wish that there was. I do.
One of the biggest misconceptions I think students have with the admissions process is this term holistic admissions, right? Like, it's okay that I have a 2.9 GPA and a 480 MCAT. I have really good extracurricular activities. And because they say on their website that they use holistic admissions, I'm going to be okay. But that's not necessarily the case, right? Talk about what, in your mind, holistic admissions is, and where stats still play a role potentially.
Yeah, holistic is whole, right? Mm-hmm. So it's looking at all of the information that you've provided, like the entire part of your package that you've presented as part of your application, your stats, your experiences, your story, your background, your writing, your science aptitude, just everything. And so I think where there could be some miscommunication, particularly like with an example, like you just mentioned, with somebody who maybe has a 2.9 and a 485 MCAT, and they're still going to look at me. At the end of the day, you still have to complete a really demanding and rigorous education, right? Mm-hmm. Science curriculum. And admissions needs to know that, like, you're going to be able to do it, because they want to accept people who walk through the door and then finish and matriculate. So, you know, taking a chance on somebody who maybe has not passed any science class in their life, or has struggled through every single biology, chemistry, physics class in their life, like, who knows if they're going to be able to make it through that demanding curriculum, and what kinds of resources they're going to need.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's an interesting perspective, that I was having that conversation at a conference with another team of deans and directors of admissions, specifically about that, right? If we have a student who has a 3.4, 3.5, who has maybe a little bit of a lower MCAT score, then the potential expectation is we may need to support this student a little bit more through their med school process, right? At least the preclinical years, more specifically. And a school knows what resources they have available and whether they're successful supporting those types of students. And the schools that don't have the resources and aren't successful doing that are going to be like, you can't come to our school. Like, we're not saying you can't be a doctor. We're just saying we can't support you at our school. So go find another school that can. And I think that's an important kind of mindset for students to have. I wonder if you agree in terms of, like, understanding for the student that you're not going to be a fit at every single medical school. And that's the point, and that's okay.
Yes, it is okay. That's life, right? You're not going to be a good fit at every job you're in or every relationship you're in. You know, there is a place for you, and it will be the right place for you. But I think that that also ties to the mission of a school as well, because for example, if an institution is very research focused and research heavy, and that is made very, very clear in their mission statement, and you have no research at all, nothing, and you're applying, you know, are you a good fit for that school? You really don't tie in to where they envision having their medical schools head in terms of research and scholarly projects and what the institution wants to gain.
Yeah, it's interesting. I give this example all the time. I was at the UC Davis conference, I think, and was speaking to an admissions committee member. I forget if it was the director of admissions or not, at UCSF. And right, big academic, big research heavy institution. And he's like, hey, tell your audience, we don't just look for students with research. And so there's this like, this differing view of like, we expect a lot of research from our students, right? We have a capstone project maybe, or we have this kind of longitudinal research that we expect. Talk about potential ways that a student may show the ability to do research without having research. Is that something that you're used to picking out of an application, or again, depending on the institution, it's like you either have it or you don't, and we're not going to go searching for other things.
I think it's just, well, two-part question, right? There are ways definitely to get research. It might not be academic research, but you could be, you know, working at a women's clinic and recognize a need for, you know, more education for like lactation or something, and take it upon yourself to like, you know, talk to every single patient and ask what their experience is, and, you know, just quantitative research there and put something together. But that's not academic research. So that's the first part to the question. And the second part is there's not a lot of time in admissions. I was talking to our other new admissions advisor this morning for a while, Dr. Crispin, and we were like, there's not a lot of time. Yeah. It would be wonderful to have an hour to sit with every application and say, let me see if I can find research or find where they volunteered or made an impact. There's just no time for that. Not with applicant pools in the thousands and thousands.
Yeah. A lot of students are afraid, right? They go on to the
MSAR. I'm afraid.
They go on to the MSAR and they see these median MCAT scores of 517, 518, and they're sitting there with their 510, which is below the 10th percentile. How afraid should students be on those numbers that the MSAR produces?
It's an average, right? It's an average. It's... don't let it dissuade you. You know, I've read applications from, you know, spectacular candidates, like people who are going to change the world, and their MCAT score maybe, you know, was way above or way below that mean. Don't let it dissuade you. If you feel as though you're a good fit for a school and a program and you align with their mission, you know, you just... I don't think it's, and I think Dr. Crispin would agree, I don't think that you should be so hyper-focused on it.
Yeah.
It's
interesting. Students, they'd be like, but if I have limited funds, I'm like, I understand. And I still don't think you should limit yourself based on stats.
I think that is a culture that is something that probably... that whole, I'm going on a rabbit hole here, but that whole concept of like, you know, the standardized testing world, right? There, for a lot of these students, the first exposure to that was applying to college, right? And needing to take the SAT and ACT and being told over and over, you don't have the right test scores to get into Harvard. You don't have the right test scores to get into UCLA. Mm-hmm. And there, it's almost like they've been brainwashed. Like, I need a... it's just so different. It's so different. And just be who you are.
Yeah.
Be who you are.
It's so fluffy though, and people want concrete objective. Like, just tell me what
students
I need to do.
Concrete, what I need to do. I know it's arbitrary, and it's. I think it's also difficult because it's a process that's out of your hands.
Yeah.
After that application is sent off, that you've spent hours and hours and hours editing, and you know, just working on for so long, the rest of the process is out of your hands, and I think that's difficult. It's just a waiting game.
Yeah, I think part of the problem is a lack of transparency as well, right?
In communication.
The MSAR has this information, right? It has median MCAT, median GPA. This year they added mean and standard deviation, which is great. It adds a little bit more transparency, but it's still not saying, hey, at this school, this is the minimum MCAT score that we'll look at. This is the minimum GPA, like an honest number, not some like, oh yeah.
But every school is different. Every school is different.
Correct. But I wish every school would say like, this is the minimum for our school.
I wish
there was
uniformity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Why uniformity versus just letting schools be different and let them be transparent?
I just think it would streamline the process for everyone and make it so less stressful. But again, that all ties to, who's funding, where does funding come from for these institutions, state institution? It's one thing to say maybe state medical schools, right, in California or say Texas or Florida, all do the same thing in a uniform way.
Mm-hmm. Similar to TMDSAS, right? They have a lot of similar processes because they're all state funded. Most of the schools in Texas are.
But private institutions have endowments, and at the end of the day, it's a business, right?
Yeah, got to make money to make money. Yeah, and then hopefully they'll turn that endowment into scholarship money like NYU and say, hey, free medical school for everyone now from now on.
That would be wonderful.
Obviously, Stanford is a big name school that 99.9% of students will know of. Again, without giving out secrets, in general, for students, we're not going to force secrets. For students who are interested in going for one reason or another, right? It's their own prerogative, that want to go to a Stanford, a Yale, a Harvard, or whatever. What do you think it is about those students that get into those schools? What is it about their application? Is it 4.0, 526, 528? Or is there the term that I personally hate and you may love it is X factor, right? What is it about an application?
Like, you know, I thought when I went into my role in admissions, like I was really curious about what, right? Like, how do I find these students and evaluate these students, and how am I going to be able to find them in 9,000 applications? And, they stand out. They just stand out. And the rest of the pool will be amazing doctors at amazing medical schools. But for that particular school and the mission and what they give, what they want out of an applicant, they just stand out. And I don't like the term X factor, but it's more like being an agent of change, mm-hmm. And making an impact. And how much impact have you made already, and how much will you contribute? What can you contribute that is different from everybody else? And what can you contribute and foster that contribution and, you know, desire to want to go out into the world and make an impact? Like, we know that accepting you means, like, when you walk out the door here, you're going to make a difference in the world.
Yeah.
So it
sounds like maybe you agree with or align with a little bit how I've kind of historically talked about how students should write their activity descriptions is less of a job description and more of that impact, right? What impact have you been able to make in this role to allow the medical schools to see who you are and the impact that you make? And then even more specifically for a question about, like, why should we select you? How I tell students is don't focus on just me, but do, hey, look at me, and here's how I can help my community based on what I, who I am and what I can bring.
Yes. Yes.
So that comes across in an application.
So for example, there's a food pantry that recently opened up in an underserved area in Rhode Island, where I'm from. And I have a few former students who are, it just opened, so they needed help. And I said these students would be great for it, and they're volunteering. But recognizing a need once you're there mm-hmm. is a big part of it. Like, oh, we realize we need more help. We want to go into different communities and college campuses and, do our own food drives on campuses and bring it back here, and just going the extra mile and really taking things to another level, not just showing up.
It's so easy to just show up, right? Yeah. Yeah. So it's not just, hey, look, I was a member of the club. Hey, look, I went and did my time and checked the box at the soup kitchen. But it's like, hey, I went to the soup kitchen and I noticed that lots of people weren't coming, and I found out what the issue was. And then I arranged for travel for the people who weren't coming.
Exactly.
Like just making stuff happen.
Making stuff happen, a mover and a shaker. Yes. Yeah. And I think that a lot of pre-med students think they just have to check the box. I have clinical, I have research, I have volunteer work. Well, I mean, when you're looking at admissions, like that's
a bare minimum.
It's a bare minimum compared to students who didn't just show up and actually took it a step further.
Yeah. For students who maybe lack stats, is that how you stand out, right? Obviously, the way that I word it is you have to show academic capability, right? First and foremost, you have to give medical schools confidence that you're going to pass medical school. And so whatever that bare minimum is for that school, that's a bar that you have to cross. But above that, is it really just those activities? Is it letters of rec? Are there certain things you're seeing letters of rec wise? What else do you think it is?
Like where the holistic word comes in, it's everything, the letters of recommendation definitely matter. The breadth and depth of activities matter. Your voice matters, your background matters, like just your personal statement and the way that you're answering secondaries, every piece matters.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about personal statements. Obviously, again, you're an advisor with us now, and you're going to help lots of students write their personal statements one-on-one or through Application Academy. I have talked to deans of admissions who said personal statements are a waste of time. We just don't look at it. It doesn't help. Based on your experience from your days at Brown, Stanford, just general knowledge of what's going on out in the world in medical school admissions, do you think the personal statement's still important? Should we be putting as much emphasis on it?
But I'm a writer. I'm a person who has a strong English background and humanities background. And I just, going back to how I was trained to be an undergrad college counselor, like it is the only piece of an application that is in your voice. It's one thing to see stats. It's one thing to see transcripts. It's one thing to read the voice of a professor and other letter writers, but the piece of writing that you are presenting is in your voice, and authenticity has to shine through. It's also a way for schools to see if you can write, because there are, you're going to write a lot, doing research projects, and that's not going to go by the wayside in medical school.
Yeah.
You're going to be writing. I do think it's important.
How do you balance that? It's in my voice, and yet if someone works with someone like you, how do you balance keeping stuff in someone's voice when you're advising them on how to write their personal statement or giving them feedback?
Extraction, pulling. It's my favorite part of advising and counseling, is just extracting somebody's story and just helping them to, think of things in different perspectives that maybe they didn't think of before. Like maybe they were just telling a straightforward story before, but you're pulling out more meaning and more you know, just how it changed your life and how it changed you, and just kind of guiding students on the right path to ultimately come up with a personal statement that, you know, is more spectacular than, you know, what they originally had.
Yeah. When you look at interview prep, right? Again, a big part of what we do is helping students with their interview prep. A big part of the admissions process at the majority of schools is still doing interviews. There's only one school that I know of that doesn't do interviews, which is strange, but that's their thing. What is it about the interview process that schools are looking for?
I've seen both sides of this because in my role at Brown, I did do a lot of mock interviews with all of our students that were applying. So, you know, just doing mock MMIs, mock one-on-ones, and just getting students used to talking about themselves, I think is the hardest thing, and just being personable. And I think in terms of what schools are looking for, they're looking to see if you're a good fit for the school. They're looking to see if there's any red flags, right? How you communicate, how you convey your thoughts, you know, in terms of like some, you know, the competencies and ethical issues and situational judgment tests and all that kinds of stuff. Just can you think on your feet? Being a doctor, you know, you are one. You're going to have to think that way. And you know, be able to just speak and communicate with people. So I think the interview is a great tool to just get to know an applicant. Somebody could appear very, very differently on camera and in conversation than they do on paper.
Yeah.
And for some students, it's a strength. Some students, you know, are just wonderful communicators and are very personable and charismatic. And they're excited for that opportunity to have their personality shine through.
Yeah. Are virtual interviews here to stay, do you think, for most schools?
I think so. I think it's so much easier. There's so much that goes into interview day. There's a lot of legwork. There's a lot of organizing. It's not just like admission staff interviewing you. It's, you know, we need to find faculty. We need to find staff. We need to find professors. We need to find alumni. And just organizing the schedules of all of those people, a majority of whom are, you know, in medicine and have crazy schedules and are traveling and on rounds. And it's just, it's a lot. Yeah. So I think that it's just easier, but I don't know. I think they're here to stay.
Yeah, that would be good.
But logistically, it's easier. And I also think for this, on the student end, there are students who are, you know, all over the world, right? Interviewing coming from all over the United States, all over the globe, all different time zones. And I think it just definitely is more equitable for everybody to not have to, you know, endure the cost and the travel and all that.
Yeah, that definitely helps. So now that you're part of the advising team with us and you're hanging out and you're helping
hang
us,
out.
you're helping us get smarter and working with students. Who do you like to work with? Like what students are you excited to work with?
All students.
Everyone.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, everyone. I mean, I would say I particularly love those students who need somebody to believe in them and maybe have that imposter syndrome and who don't think that they can do it and maybe were never told they could do it and just need a little bit of reinforcement and somebody to believe in them. You know, that was most of my population at Brown, and, you know, they're off doing amazing things in medical school, and it's just so rewarding. But I like working with all kinds of students.
All of them. And you are going to be at MappedCon in October in Baltimore.
Presenting.
Yeah.
Presenting.
You may also be doing, I'm assuming, some one-on-one sessions as well with students. So for students interested
in MMI, I will be helping with mock MMI,
yep,
which is great.
So everyone should come hang out with all of us, the whole yes. Medical School HQ and MAPT team and other team members who aren't announced yet, but we have some exciting news. It may be out by the time this episode comes out, but we got some exciting news coming about who else we're adding to the team and who will be there at MAPTCon in October. Go to MAPTCon.com for more information there. Dina, thank you so much for coming on the episode today. Any final words of wisdom? Any final words of wisdom for the student on this path and freaking out?
Yeah, just utilize any resources you can. Dr. Gray has put out so many free resources. Have somebody help you with the process, because I would say that a lot of students that aren't successful, the process just didn't have any advising or anybody to give them advice along the way. And I think that that's really important because there's just so much intricacy that goes on with med school admissions.
All right, there you have it. Again, that's Dina Golini, our newest advisor here at medicalschoolhq.net, former MD admissions officer at Stanford University Medical School and advisor in the Brown Medical School as well, their SMP program. So if you want to work with Dina, Christine Crispin, Dr. Christine Crispin, Dr. Scott Wright, Courtney Lewis, or Verenia Granum, we have a small team of amazing advisors. Go over to medicalschoolhq.net/advising. Check out how we can help you today. Hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.